Hello and welcome to your weekly dose of the latest sustainability news brought to you by The Green Elephant. This week, Biden gets sued for doing something about climate change. UK citizens get the right to repair. A hospital goes vegan. And single use is better than reusable. Joining me to discuss these and more as usual is Russell. Morning, Russell.
Good morning, Mike. Yes, I'm looking forward to this show. I quite like the closing story.
Yes, indeed. Yes. That should be a fun one. Also coming up tomorrow, that is, and for the rest of the week, are our B Corp interviews. So make sure you tune into those. And of course, they all include fact or fake. We'll also be talking about Paris tax, plastic waste reports, lithium, Japan, Boardman, bikes, electric cars, lab-grown meat, Amazon, Hawaii, Fukushima, shoes, boot and foot. So let's take a look at some big sustainability news stories from the week. So starting off with some sort of national governmental news, and 12 states are suing the Biden administration over his executive order on climate change. So the executive order says that greenhouse gases have a social cost of $9.5 trillion, and the states are saying, who are you to determine what the social cost of this is? And therefore, these states are taking the administration to court to say, you can't calculate that, and it intrudes too much in our lives, and you're not going to change the way we use our cars and our refrigerators and how we do our electric bills. And they say it's going to hurt the economy. So, not smooth sailing for Biden. There are plenty that disagree with him.
But what a ridiculous, I don't know. You're not allowed to calculate something.
I know.
What do you mean? I mean, I can understand them going, I can test the calculation because we've done our own and we don't believe it's that high.
Well,
I don't know. Anyway, I mean, this goes in hand with the fact that there's a recent report out which says that the US must slash its emissions by at least 57%. And not only that, is it the 57% against the 2005 levels. So with every increase, I mean, what an odd thing. Why didn't they do it on the 2020 levels and or the 2019 levels maybe might be better? It's a ridiculous figure, but it shows the scale of what needs to be done to achieve this net zero by 2050 is an absolute cull of what they're emitting.
It's just eye-watering, isn't it? And when you see more and more of the numbers, because, you know, over the last decade, people have been asking for change and for reductions, and there's been a lot of paper shuffling and a lot of saying, oh yeah, we'll get to that, we'll think about that. Yeah. And we've spent 10 years thinking about it and maybe getting to it, and obviously the reduction is getting bigger and bigger make. And you know, you've got to say there is absolutely no way that the US is going to do that,
half their carbon emissions,
more than half,
by 2030, I think that is.
Yeah, so in the next 9 years they've got, I mean, this is 57% reduction on 2005 levels. They're, you know, talking 70% reduction in 9 years. Never going to happen. So we're in trouble. However, Biden has been bringing more people into his team. We talked about carbon taxes a couple of weeks ago about how they're going to calculate this. And so Biden has brought in a new guy, Noah Kaufman. He's a senior economist, and he's going to be in charge of looking at carbon taxes. So, I mean, that's a good thing. You know, we've said before on the show that if you want to make change, you need to make the change where it's going to hurt big corporations and countries and stuff. So financially, you need to make these changes. So we'll wait and see what this appointment comes up with in terms of policy and regulation.
And going back to our B Corp interviews at the beginning of the month, you interviewed CAPEQ.
Yes.
And I think part of the fact or fake, an interesting one to look at and ask them about, is about the carbon price and whether it, what they're saying is that we're looking at the moment of a carbon price of up to $64 per metric ton. And in 5 years, time, probably $124. And what a cap EQ we're contesting is that's just too low, because the cost of sequestering is not about planting trees. It's, as we'll get on to in a second.
So you're saying that rather than buying Bitcoin or NFTs, I should buy some carbon, because I could sell that for loads of money in 5 years' time.
Probably not a bad idea. So buy yourself some carbon credits whilst they're cheap, people, because it might be worth it.
Yep.
There's an interesting investment plan.
Yes.
So on to plastic, but not off the US, I'm afraid.
No.
There was a law passed recently, an international law, where 180 nations agreed to place strict limits on the exporting of waste from richer countries to poorer ones. And they made it illegal to receive this stuff into your country. Poor countries couldn't receive it because it would be illegal. But they didn't, which seems ridiculous, make it so that you couldn't send it, and made it illegal to send. So the US are still sending stuff. It's illegal products which should get turned away at the borders of these poorer countries. But of course, the poorer countries are poorer countries, and therefore they want the work, and therefore they'll take the illegal stuff. And then there's this really interesting comment in this thing where I think it was a comment from Maersk, because obviously they're a massive shipping company. And they said, well, you know, our captains or those responsible for the cargo will, once it arrives, we can dispose of it or have it or return it. And you think, well, how do you dispose of plastic in a foreign land that won't receive it? Dump it into the sea, burn it.
But one place they won't be sending it is Australia, because they've this week announced their national plastics plan, which, you know, has some good words in there about banning single-use plastic on beaches, ending expanded polystyrene packaging, and making sure you've got microplastic filters on washing machines, and, you know, they're going to look at compostable plastics and things like that. But I think the really interesting one about this Australian plan is the end and the ban on biodegradable plastic, because that has been a get out clause for so many organizations who have said, oh, it's okay, we're biodegradable, and we know about the plastic bag in the cup of seawater for 7 years that's still there and doesn't degrade. And so I think that's a really interesting approach, as they're saying, you know, let's get rid of this biodegradable nonsense.
As well.
Yeah.
So that's quite a strong initiative by the Australian government, and they are really going for it, the Australians.
Yeah.
Moving on now to a report that's been issued called the State of Green Business Report 2021, should I say.
Yep.
And it's focused on the US and global companies. It's a long report. There's a lot in it, so we're not going to cover that off. But some of the perhaps more positive things: 90% of US companies are publishing a sustainability report now.
Yeah, which I saw that. That's good.
From 20% of them in 2011. And 53% of revenues in major US companies are generated in business activities that support the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So there is definite signs that it is moving. Were there any other highlights that you saw in that one? Or
I thought that they said there's a rise in corporate advocacy. So across the piece, people are speaking up for, you know, ESG, environmental, social governance issues, social change, corporate responsibility, or CSR, corporate social responsibility. So all of these issues are getting louder and louder within the corporate environment. So that is a good thing to see. I think generally it's the tide has turned. It's not turning quickly enough, but, you know, okay, let's take the small wins. At least things are happening.
Well, we've got an interesting interview coming up at the end of the month with North Carolina State University, and they're running a B Academics, and it's quite interesting because, of course, what they are doing is training the entrepreneurs and the workers of the future, but they're training them in sustainability. So watch out, companies, because if you aren't doing it, workers are going to start pushing you.
Well, and back to the, we've mentioned the Donut Economics book by Kate Raworth a number of times on the show. And I think the big change in training that needs to happen is the training of economists who are, you know, market economists and capital economists who are all about money and markets and shares and that kind of stuff and, you know, constant growth. If we retrain those for a more circular or social economy, that will be a really good thing to see. But anyway, France has its repairability index, which was a great thing,
you know, for economies,
for small consumer electronics. And the UK is introducing something similar, which is great. This is for large consumer electronics or white goods, as you might call them. So in the UK this summer, it's going to mean that things like microwaves, TVs, fridges, washing machines, manufacturers are going to be legally required to make parts available so that we can repair them at home. So that's going to be interesting. My 50-inch LED flat screen TV, which I don't have, I just made that up. Anyway, 50-inch flat LED screen TV. If my screen cracks, I'm going to legally be able to repair that at home, and I'm looking forward to that. I think there's an opening, a glut in the market in YouTube how to repair videos for these things as they come on stream.
Yeah, so. and there are people, you know, and obviously what it will do is bring back perhaps the corner repair shop who will now not be voiding your warranty as soon as you turn a screw. And the warranty is almost pointless because the warranty says, oh, you've returned it to us and we'll repair it under warranty, but we'll charge. Yeah. And it's just a ridiculous lock-in that they've done with consumer electronics. But they want to extend that, don't they, as well?
But I mean, it's a great way of, you know,
it's a brilliant
ending the sort of throwaway nature of those products. So.
And once again, quite bizarre that the first thing EU do something great, and the first thing we've done after exiting the EU is, hey, yeah, we'll do that as well.
That's good. We'll copy it.
We'll take that. Okay, different story. We're on to a little bit on electric vehicles. Understandably, the electric vehicle boom has put a pressure on the battery market, and the battery market runs on lithium. Well, not directly, but it needs to trade in it. And lithium has jumped 68% since the start of the year.
Oh, we should have, you know, we issued the trends at the start of the year of things we thought were going to happen. We said battery storage was something to get into in 2021. And oh, look, we should have done it. Oh, well, there we are.
If only we had millions to do stuff with. But yeah, a massive turnaround. And, you know, part of the problem is lithium is not a common metal, that's for sure. But
well, I mean,
it's going to become under demand.
Yeah, and locally we've got the Cornish Lithium Company that is restarting and has got all sorts of funding because they're reopening coal mines tin mines because it's worth it to get the lithium out that's in there.
Yeah, and at 11,000 a metric ton, it's not surprising.
Yeah. And I think we had a story that was similar to this, and I can't remember which country it was, but Petaluma is the first US city to ban construction of new gas stations. So. You're not going to be able to get a new petrol station in Petaluma, and you know
it's a great way to, if you're going to cut down on petrol and diesel driven cars, then why would you build? It's like building a coal plant when you're banning coal. UK government in Cumbria.
Well, I think they're quickly backtracking on that one. I think.
Well, it's hardly surprising. What a ridiculous thing to do. But off topic for the day. Yeah. It's an interesting article about Japan. And the fact that Japan are actually holding back on creating electric cars. Now, we know Japan is having some of the most go-ahead and prevalent car manufacturers in the world, like Toyota and Honda. Massive. And, of course, I think Honda was one of the first to have a hybrid in the market many years ago in the Insight. And we know this very popular Nissan Leaf.
Which and the Prius actually, before that. Yeah.
And the Prius, oh yes, that's right. And the Prius still going, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the Leaf, I think there was some statistic that said it is actually now 65% of the total
really?
Japan electric cars that are being produced is just the Leaf.
Right.
And so Japan are kind of cautious, and they're cautious because they don't really think that the rush into electric vehicles is right. And you know, we're there with them, aren't we, really?
We are. We've discussed this on the show before. You know, the capacity of the grid, the generation still needs to take place. It just takes place somewhere else. You don't see the fossil fuel being put into your car. The fossil fuel happens elsewhere. And
that's right. And so, that you know, what they're thinking is that the hybrid is actually a strong contender for a good positioned car to make it a viable model. And so it's going to be, you know, that fight where lithium goes through the roof and will be in the end become what will happen with lithium going by 68%. That means not only does your first purchase of the car go up, your replacement of your batteries, which will come in about 5-6 years, will be expensive.
Even more expensive.
And then you go, oh, hold on, I just invested heavily in an electric vehicle that I can't afford
to replace the batteries in.
Replace batteries, and it will become useless to sell.
Yeah, or I'll end up renting the batteries, and the rent will cost me more than the fossil fuels do anyway.
Than ever used to cost me in electric. But I suppose this is it. We're hitting people in the pocket. And that will come on. And we've got a got the next one.
Well, I guess somebody else that's not very optimistic about the future of electric vehicles is former Olympic gold medal winner Chris Boardman, who's a cyclist, and you know, he's very pro cycling and wants to, and he's been running campaigns to try and promote more cycling, particularly here in the UK. He's looking across Holland and Asian countries where are very cycling heavy, and particularly in the cities. And he's saying that, you know, electric vehicles are potentially the biggest problem, because, you know, we had the compulsion to move away from petrol, diesel, fossil fuel powered cars. But now we've given people this other option, and they've got no reason to move on to more friendly options of transport, which are cycling and walking.
Yes.
And so, you know, you're looking to reduce emissions, and the best way of reducing the emissions is to walk, run, or cycle. And we're not doing those. We're just going electric. So we're kind of doing a little bit rather than as much as we could do. So.
And we're pushing emissions and use of fossil fuels elsewhere, like into electricity generation.
Anyway, enough on cars.
Let's go into the sky. Well, a vertical forest is nearing completion in Taipei, called the Tao Zhu Yin Huan, I think, or previously known.
If you say so.
Yeah, to be honest, if somebody wants to correct me, I'm quite happy to be phonetically corrected on social. But it was called the Agora Garden, which is a lot easier.
That's better, yeah.
So it's a helix-shaped or DNA-shaped building, which is said to, when it's at its peak, be absorbing 130 tons of CO2 a year. Which is an impressive claim, but what they've basically done is create a forest which is vertical, having 23,000 trees and shrubs and plants along ground floor balconies and terraces. So
that was the astonishing thing. 23,000 trees planted in a building.
On a building.
23,000?
Yeah. I mean, you know, shrubs and plants as well. So let's take the fact that you could have a marigold. But even so, it's going to be interesting. They've got this fantastic view of the city, the 21-story building this is, but it eventually will grow, so your view might be slightly obstructed a few sun windows because you'll have a forest outside. But a great idea, and maybe that's, you know, and it because of its shape, it facilitates those plants being able to grow on the building. It's I think it's quite a handsome building too. Probably got a lot of concrete in it. And they are in and they've had to deploy a number of canny things because this is an earthquake zone. And we're going to hear about the frightening impact of earthquakes in a second.
Yeah. Well, the next one is an amusing take on the previous story about the right to repair. And this is our friend, First Dog on the Moon, who produces some amazing and amusing cartoons related to climate change. So do go and have a look at the show page and follow the link to this one. It's very amusing. It's about the right to repair and making things last, and it's got the have the right to repair fairy. And I like this. The start of the sketch says, "Hi, can you fix my Frappe Flinger 5000? It barely flings the frappes, and it doesn't even frame them anymore."
a good way of avoiding hurting anybody's feelings about if he'd come in with a coffee maker, there would be a whole bunch of people would complain about it, I expect.
Yeah.
So I do like that. Yeah. Well, we haven't talked food yet.
Oh.
And we haven't talked about lab grown meat.
Yum, yum.
At least a week.
No.
And so there's been a study which has looked at this new phenomena of cultivated meat in factories.
Okay.
And putting it up against obviously the beef and chicken and pork production, the analysis does say that if you do this, if a lab is growing this stuff and using renewable energy, the carbon footprint is 92% lower than beef, 52% lower than pork. Oh, I'm getting hungry. And 17% lower than chicken. Okay. However, it doesn't even if there are new measures to breed less methane production cows and to have different feeds and such like. But even if you do that, if a factory doesn't use renewable energy, and we know that that's not just having about on your roof, that's about being able to run 100% on the renewable energy guaranteed. It will have, no matter what they do, it will have a larger carbon footprint than meat. So, from a farm. So, it's a nice balance, I think, because we're concerned that, one, if you don't want to eat meat, don't eat meat. That's the best way of reducing your carbon emissions. Eat less meat. Don't go and find a meat alternative, which could be just as bad.
Could be just as bad. Yeah. Well, one place you won't find it is in the Beirut Hayek Hospital. Oh.
Absolutely.
Because they are the world's first vegan hospital. So I like this statement. They say, our patients will no longer wake up from surgery to be greeted with ham, cheese, milk and eggs. Now, I don't know if you've been in the hospital, but I've never been greeted with that, with that selection. It's been the former description that's in this article is lukewarm processed food. That's what I've found.
That's impossible. Better.
Not the ham, cheese, milk and eggs. But anyway, so yeah.
Well, isn't lab grown meat processed food anyway? But that's a different.
Well, it is. It's the very first hospital, and they're saying that, you know, all those foods that, you know, meat that contributes to poor health, they're going to not give those anymore. They're just going to have a vegan diet, which, you know, makes, from what they say, that the patients are more healthy. So interesting.
Hats off to them. I think it's a good move. It's a family hospital, so they can, and private, so they can do what they like, really.
Yeah,
but it'd be good to see where the others follow.
Yeah.
A very depressing statistic now. The Amazon rainforest is no longer the lungs of the planet.
Ooh.
It has now been calculated that due to the large swathes of the forest being cut down in places, and we'll mention Brazil because we'll get them in because they're an embarrassment to the international community as it stands.
Yeah.
Sorry, anybody that's listening in Brazil, but you need to do something about your president.
Yeah.
New study says that the rainforest is now emitting, and trees do emit greenhouse gases themselves. They aren't perfect in themselves, but in the rather complex calculation, with the burning considered and what is being released and the deforestation, they are now a net zero. forest, so which is not great, because that's not what you want. You need that to be seriously positive.
No, and I guess, you know, it must be a peer-reviewed study because it's come out in an academic journal. So you would assume that it's not just somebody making this stuff up.
Yeah.
So that's quite sad. As Sorry. is flooding in Hawaii, and just, yes, just heavy rains has caused flooding on multiple islands in Hawaii this week. Just another story about flooding, and you know, we tend to forget, you know, how many weeks ago was it that there was major landslides and flooding in, was it Bangladesh and India and places. We just kind of move on because we talk about these stories, and then, oh, it's another flooding story in a different place, and oh, it's another story. And those kind of stories, those events, you know, the impact of those lasts for months, if not years, and we kind of move on. There's another flooding story. Okay, well,
you know, move on. Yeah,
it's kind of becomes every day, doesn't it, that there's, you know, natural disasters, and we just kind of treat it a bit every day, really. But as the government officials are saying in Honolulu, we need to get used to climate events like this. You know, that's what they're saying in Hawaii, is this is just going to happen.
And they did a study, didn't they, which over a previous period of time, I think it was 2005 or something, it just showed that storms are getting more frequent and more aggressive, or whatever the term was. Yeah. Okay, different kind of natural disaster. Not climate-based, I don't think, although it'd be an interesting discussion, which was...
Was it climate-based, an earthquake, then a tsunami?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Can earthquakes be affected by the climate, warming of the crust? Who knows? However, it is an interesting retrospective on the Fukushima tragedy on the nuclear plant there. And I would encourage anybody to go to the National Geographic and read this article. It doesn't read like a news article. It reads like a good story. But if I just read the second paragraph, it says about the earthquake. It says the shaking lasted for 6 minutes. In Tokyo, skyscrapers swayed. The very planet shifted on its axis. The 9.0 magnitude earthquake was powerful enough to shorten the Earth's day. Never picked that one up before.
No.
Putting an extra wobble into its rotation. Probably just the one day, but can you imagine an Earth event so strong it could shorten a day?
Yeah. Well, it obviously got through to the Germans, because the next story here is, you know, Germany are in or at the start of a nuclear phase out because of what happened at Fukushima. And I didn't realize that Angela Merkel was a trained physicist. No. But anyway, you know, they had, after the Fukushima disaster, they've had a change in strategy and change in mind, and they voted, and I didn't realize, to phase out atomic energy by the end of 2022. It'd be interesting to see how Germany power themselves in the future if it's not coal and gas. But they've, you know, taken the decision, no nuclear for us.
Moving on to back to our tables again. A study has investigated the environmental impact of single and multi-use packaging used at quick service restaurants.
Sorry, reusable packaging is good, isn't it? I get some package, I can reuse it more than once. That's got to be good.
Yes, but you would have thought so. Yeah. But in this study, it's suggesting that paper-based single-use tableware is more sustainable than the reusable. And it's interesting. I think very much targeted perhaps at the Americans, because and I know you've never been to America, but find that Americans do use in their homes plastic cutlery that they then discard.
Yes.
Although they could wash it and reuse it. Maybe it's targeted at that. But, you know, with us, with metal stuff at home, which can be reused for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
I'm trying to...
Well, it's interesting. I have been to the US and I've been to New York. Yeah. And I was really interested that going out to eat in restaurants, they would have food served in disposable paper dishes and disposable cutlery. And you thought, well, you're a restaurant, you're going to be serving every day of the week for years, why is this not reusable? But hey ho.
Yeah, because they didn't, obviously, just a pain in the neck to wash it, so it's just easier to bung it in the bin. But at least, you know, so perhaps paper-based products, that's the way to go. If you're going to do throwaway, do it properly.
Anyway, and finally, our final story of the week, and this qualifies as potentially my favourite story of the year, if not the show so far. So Shoezone, they're a shoe retailer, and they've got stores all over the UK, and they're kind of a big warehouse-type shoe retailer. And they've got some changes to their management team this week. So not essentially a sustainability story, but they've got Charles Smith, he's the chairman. Anthony Smith, he's the chief executive. Catherine Bowen, she's the company secretary. Steve Orr, the operations director. But they've announced a change in their finance boss. So their previous boss at Shoezone was called Peter Foote. So Peter Foote was the finance director at Shoezone, but they've announced his replacement. This is brilliant. Peter Foote has been replaced by Terry Boot.
I wonder if it was part of the application form.
Yeah.
Foot-related. Oh,
yeah. Is your name related to an item of footwear or a part of the lower leg? Apparently, Terry Boot became a shoo-in for the job after Mr. Foot unexpectedly walked away.
Oh, dear. Oh, what a groan. Let's hope Terry's good, because I'd hate for him to get the boot.
Yeah, I wouldn't be good.
Oh, anyway. Good grief. Should we end on that groan? Oh,
I think we should. If you've enjoyed the show, please do go and visit the show page at greenelephant.show. There you can find links to all the stories we've discussed, instructions on how to find us on all usual podcast providers. Please do go and visit and review, as it really helps us continue to make the show and hopefully keep you entertained. So hopefully we'll see you at greenelephant.show or on social at greenelepod. But until next time, thanks for listening, and we hope you have a sustainable week.